created, we've been talking about these tectonic plates for a long time. We've been talking about how God from underneath the earth brings up red-hot glowing liquid rock called magma. And this chart you see on the screen with all these thousands and thousands of miles of red lines. From down underneath the earth, God brings red-hot glowing liquid rock from time to time. And it comes up at temperatures of 1,200 to 1,600 degrees Celsius. That's well over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And brothers and sisters, that's hot. We've been taking a look at what it does when it comes up on land. It burns up during the tribulation period all green grass and a third of the trees. Then we began to look at what it does in the sea. Well, the volcanic eruptions during the tribulation period are going to come up first on land. Naturally, you'd see them first because you can't see the cones starting to build on the ocean seafloor. So first, it's burning all the green grass and the trees, a third of the trees. Then all of a sudden, John sees a great burning mountain in the midst of the sea, and this liquid rock is coming up. We talked last Sunday about the effect that that liquid rock has, because most of the eruptions on the ocean seafloor, if not all of them, are basaltic magma, which has the highest iron content. It causes oxidation of the iron. It causes the sea to turn a blood red, which I showed you last Sunday. And then the currents of the oceans and seas of the world carry it away from that. And during the tribulation period, that's going to be one of the factors that is involved in the water turning blood, a blood red color, hamar hamati. This type of material, when it spreads out from a volcanic eruption, literally smothers out the aquatic life. It takes the oxygenation out of the water, and the fish die. That also turns the water red. So we're now going to discuss a second factor that has to do with these tectonic plates. Two-thirds are on the ocean seafloor, and we're going to take a look at what happens when the basaltic magma at 1,200 to 1,600 degrees Celsius comes up and warms the water. Now, it's going to warm the ocean seafloor water, particularly above these cracks. And we're going to take a look at something else that has to do with warming seawater that causes the water to turn red and kills aquatic life. So now that we've looked at this chart for a few minutes, let's go back and just take a look at the scriptures. We've already covered Revelation 8:5 and 8:6 and 8:7, where all the green grass is burned up. We've been on Revelation 8:8, which is the second trumpet, for some time. And the second angel sounded, as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. We've already covered that, proved that it was a volcano. And the third part of the sea became blood. It took on a blood red color. Now, I'm going to show you something else that also kills aquatic life and turns the ocean seawater blood red. Verse 9, and a third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and a third part of the ships were destroyed. We're going to talk about how the third part of the ships were destroyed, Lord willing, if I get back alive from Hillsboro. But this morning, we're going to talk about the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. We've already talked about an inorganic substance. Inorganic means it has no life. The inorganic substance is where the liquid rock comes up, causes a rusting called oxidation in the water, turns it blood red, spreads out, and kills aquatic life. So it turns it red, and it kills aquatic life. But now we're going to discuss a second thing that does the same thing, and it does it in the same place, but it does it for a different reason. We're going to talk about a third part of the creatures which are in the sea and had life died. When this liquid rock comes up, as I said, along all those red lines and above them, it's going to produce a warming of the water. We're going to take a look at a particular type of creation of God, and how many of them are there? Well, these are dinoflagellate. And dinoflagellate, there are more dinoflagellate in the midst of the sea than there are sand on all the beaches of all the oceans and seas of the world. This little creature, you could not possibly even imagine how many there are. Only God knows. Many of them are microscopic, and you just can't see them. But they're there, and they're real. Now, there's lots of things you can do to dinoflagellate. And not all species of dinoflagellate operate the same way. But there are a number of species that do what I'm going to show you. And among these species in dinoflagellate, which are quite numerous, once you warm the water, here's what happens. It starts off a very harmless little creature. But when you start heating the water, it begins to multiply. It begins to break apart. And it begins to release a blood red color into the actual water itself. Now, the blood-red color may vary anywhere from brown through orange through red, but it is a red color, and the actual Greek word hamartomati covers that particular spectrum. So this particular phenomena occurs when you warm the water. There's one thing you don't ever want to do, and that's warm the water. Now, the University of Alabama has a football team, and they're called the Crimson Tide. Probably the name has been lost in antiquity, and you'd have to go back and research the original records of the school to see where this name came from. But actually, it's not named after an elephant. Their mascot is an elephant. I don't know if you've ever noticed at the University of Alabama, they have an elephant for a mascot. Well, that's quite an extreme, because these little tiny dinoflagellate is what they were named after. The Crimson Tide is what they're called. I doubt if they even remembered. I dare say Bear Bryant didn't know it. It's just something that happened a long time ago and most people have forgotten. The Alabama Crimson Tide are pictured as a powerful force that sweeps across and destroys everything in its path. That's what the Alabama football team would like you to think. Well, the Crimson Tide is a killer. It's a killer of fish. And an average dinoflagellate is only about 0.03 millimeters long. That's pretty small. Yet in large enough numbers, this organism can cause red tides. The one thing you don't want to have is a red tide, because it kills all aquatic life. And basically, and quite frankly, we don't understand all the things that trigger this off, but one of the things that does trigger it off is the warming of the water. This is called a red tide. Now, this is an old article written a long time ago in a scientific journal, and back then they didn't know that much about it. They said it kills thousands of fish. It doesn't kill thousands of fish, it kills millions of fish. The dead fish wash up on beaches and pollute some of our recreation areas. When you heat the water, it turns it a blood red color. Now we're going to talk about this, and I'm reading you this direct from an article in a leading scientific journal. Under certain conditions, it reproduces at a fantastic rate. 60 million have been counted in a single quart of seawater. The organism tends to utilize the dissolved oxygen at a rate which creates an aerobic condition. That means it takes the oxygen out of the water. Thus, aerobic organisms such as fish die. It also releases an airborne poison gas which irritates the human respiratory tract and may cause coughing, sneezing, and even shortness of breath. So you can see that 60 million have been counted in a single quart of seawater. That gives you an idea of what they're like. During the red tide off the coast of Florida in 1952 and again in 1954, enormous numbers of fish died and the shore was littered for miles with stinking fish. Another dinoflagellate, gonialex, that also causes water to appear rusty red at times because of its great numbers. Gonialex catenella is known to have been the cause of disastrous poisoning in man. Several kinds of shellfish along the Pacific coast feed on them. Now, I'm going to ask you to remember that. Several kinds of shellfish along the Pacific coast feed on them, thus making the shellfish poisonous for human consumption. I want you to remember that. How many of you remember Alfred Hitchcock's picture, The Birds? Remember that? You're not supposed to go to picture shows. I heard Jimmy Swaggart say that. You've been going to picture shows, anime seals. Just wanted to catch you. I tell you, you need to repent, anime. You say, well, other people held up their hands. Yeah, but I bet you went two or three times. Oh, on television. You've been watching that dirty tube again. Well, in any case, I'm going to show you what caused those birds to go mad. See, that movie was based on an actual occurrence. They did have a bunch of birds that went crazy. So it was due to something I'm going to show you. So I ask you to remember this. Several kinds of shellfish along the Pacific coast feed on, thus making the shellfish poisonous for human consumption. In 1941, there were 346 cases of poisoning with 24 deaths. Since 1941, state laws forbid the gathering of shellfish during the season of the red waters. It turns the water red, and during that season, you must not eat shellfish. How poisonous is it? Experiments have shown the toxin and alkaloid to be about 10 times as potent as strychnine, which is used for poisoning mice. So this thing that's released into the water turns it red, and it actually is extremely deadly. It's one of the most deadly poisons known to man. Here's a picture of what it looks like. Whenever it turns, this is in Africa, and it usually occurs in salt water, but it can occur equally as well in inland waters, fresh water. This is a picture of what had occurred in Africa. You can see back out here the water is still a bluish color, but you can see in here where the dinoflagellate are, and it's turned a beautiful blood red. So once the water starts to heat in any area, and remember, that's down the Rift Valley in Africa, and remember what runs down that Rift Valley in Africa, that crack, and I've told you about the heating that comes up under that Rift Valley. Warming of the water in there causes a dinoflagellate population explosion. All these articles I have are by leading marine biologists. This is a book entitled Dangerous Sea Creatures, A Complete Guide to Hazardous Marine Life by Thomas Hale. It talks about the red tide phenomena. The red tide, as we know it today, is primarily restricted to salt water. Outbreaks are, however, worldwide in occurrence, with the waters of India, Japan, Africa, Southern California, and most coasts of South America being most affected. Now, this next statement is very interesting because it's very important. Remember I told you that when the volcanic eruptions occur, it releases into the water, because of the heating of the iron ore in the basaltic magma, a blood red oxidation turning the water red. It spreads out and kills the aquatic life. But it would not kill the dinoflagellate themselves. Notice, it survives in nutrient-poor water. So these two can exist side by side, these two phenomena, both the actual removal of oxygen in the water and nutrient poor water, and it would allow both to occur at the same time. Notice the red tide. Continue with the same article. Fish are killed not just by the thousands, but by the thousands of tons. And now, since that article was put out, that's been revised. Not just by the thousands of tons, but by the millions of tons. Now, for a long time, the civilized world was convinced that this couldn't possibly be done by nature. It had to be done by man. Some years ago, when the civilized world was becoming increasingly concerned with man-made pollutant of air, land, and water, there was a loud hue and cry by those who believe the red tide was the direct result of the wanton discharge of human agricultural and factory waste that flowed into the Gulf. That turned out not to be the case. It would almost have been a blessing if this were so. If it were so, it would have been a potent weapon in the hands of those interested in preventing the human race from destroying itself by pollution. Heedless as man may be of fouling his environment, there is no clear-cut evidence to prove that he is responsible for the red tide. Now notice what it says next. It seems instead to be a destructive phenomena created solely by nature. Who controls nature? Who made nature? Who made all things? God. God determines when this will occur, how it will occur, and to what degree, and in the tribulation period, he's really going to bring it forward. I want you to notice what it says next. The recovery time is surprisingly fast once the trouble has subsided. Why is that important? The Lord's got a millennial reign to do. So when all this kills the aquatic life and the oceans and seas of the world, there has to be a restoration. And it has to be done quickly for the sake of man's existence. That's why the recovery time is very short. So after most of the aquatic life and the oceans and seas of the world is killed, when the Lord returns, it will very quickly manifest itself, because this will be over. The magmatic intrusions coming up will end, and the earth will be in a time of peace, and all the tension and pressure will have been released by what happened in the last 3.5 years of the tectonic plate shifting, and God has this all planned where it works out. Well, what causes these actual eruptions? It's caused by the heating of the oceans and seas themselves, primarily. Notice what this writer says. And this man is probably an atheist. If it should ever become widespread over the oceans of the world, it could conceivably put an end to all fish life, which is exactly what the Bible says. That was an old article way back in the late 1970s, I believe, when I first started doing this. Since that time, we've had a lot of substantiation. New killers unmasked. Silver has been shocked by some recent research findings that have turned up new killer organisms. Vanishing villain. New species of dinoflagellate kills fish and then disappears into the sediments. A North Carolina State University traced fish to a one-cell supervillain that quickly kills its victims with a powerful neurotoxin, reproduces in large numbers, then vanishes into a resting stage in sediment. Phantom is responsible for 25% of the fish kills in North Carolina. They believe it is guilty of many unsolved kills elsewhere. So the same God who made all this is the same God who actually is going to produce it. Now let's take a look at National Geographic Earth Almanac. Why the birds really went berserk. And here you see a picture of a lady with a bird getting ready to peck her ear. Notice, biologist David Garrison and his colleagues at the University of California at Santa Cruz may have solved the mystery. They think the birds were poisoned. Ocean water sometimes bloom with plankton which produces domoic acid, often toxic. If anchovies eat the plankton, and if seabirds eat the anchovies, the birds may suffer widespread neurological damage. So that's what explained, Charlie. This has helped me to understand a lot of things. Where'd you take your basic? San Diego. Where'd you take your basic? That's what happened. You guys ate some of those shellfish and you've got neurological damage. That's exactly what happened to both of you. And that explains why they call Marines jarheads. That has to be it. Okay. Now, Health and Welfare Canada. The domoic acid was traced to a bloom of diadems. That's what we're talking about. Golden brown algae, once thought innocent of all toxicity. In 1990, the first confirmed outbreak was traced to dinoflagellate in Canadian waters. That's a long way north. The Red Sea is probably named after these noxious algae blooms, some of which pack a poison that can kill humans in hours. The Red Sea is named after them, probably. New types of toxin are appearing, and known algae killers are extending their reach into new regions of the world. Previously unknown organisms and organisms thought to be harmless have just exploded, says plankton ecologist Don Anderson. Why this burst of activity? No one knows for sure. Many scientists believe that these algae species have long been around in small numbers as part of what plankton ecologists call the hidden flora. It's almost like God has held these in reserve till the last day. We're seeing new kids on the block now, but they probably were there before. The question is, why are they blooming now? I think they're blooming now because we're having more volcanic activity than we've ever had before. I've shown you the proof of that. As we approach the tribulation period, we're having more and more volcanic eruptions. The ocean seawater is heating. It's not because of global warming, because of what we have aloft in the atmosphere. It's basically because of what's happening underneath. I don't question that part of the global warming and different types of things of that nature have to do with some things above, but most of it is due to the ocean seawater. There's all kind of different things that are happening now. Does cell from hell suck human blood? Does cell from hell suck human blood? Raleigh, North Carolina. There are lots of things, strange articles coming out on these dinoflagellate, but this is a picture of what happens when one occurs in near a beach. You can see all these, literally millions of fish coming up on the beach. And you can see the beach absolutely covered with them. It turns the water blood red, or red color, and here's a little boy sitting in a boat. And you can see all the way around him, red tide in California waters, you can see these millions and millions of fish all around him that the dinoflagellates have killed. Now, even the shark, capable of standing punishment that would kill true fish almost immediately, the shark's not a true fish, it's mostly cartilage, will die if the concentration becomes too intense. So there's nothing can withstand this except the organism itself. Now, this is what's interesting. Some investigators are keeping close check on the change of water temperature in hopes of finding a way to accurately predict when an outbreak can be expected. We know it's due primarily to water temperature, and water temperature is something we're watching and we're trying to predict. As these volcanic eruptions have continued to occur along all of these red lines, they have been producing continuous increases in the number of outbreaks. Here, in 1970, across the surface of the world, this is how many outbreaks we had. Outbreaks of paralytic shellfish poisoning affected more than twice as many areas in 1990 as they did in 1970. This is August of 1994. Red tides, Scientific American, that's what it came out of, the magazine, Scientific American, red tides, a growing hazard. Now notice, in 1970, we had 18 outbreaks of the dinoflagellate population explosion, turning the water red and killing the fish. In 1990, we had 46 reports. So you can see that from 1970, 18 reports, to 46 in 1990, that's 160% increase. And here are where they had, you can see all these red dots, and if you count them, there are 46 of them. And you can see they cover the entire world. They go all the way from the northern hemisphere, all the way down to the southern tip of South America, all the way up to the northern tip of England and the southern tip of Norway. They go across the Mediterranean. They cover all of the Marianas Trench. And they seem to be occurring along shorelines where the water is coming in and warming from the volcanic activity further out. So on these red lines, right now, we're having more volcanic activity than we've ever had in history. Going back to where we started, Revelation 8, 8 through 9. And the second angel sounded, as it were, a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. And a third part of the sea became blood. It turned a blood red color. And a third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. And a third part of the ships were destroyed. Lord willing, next Sunday, we'll talk about the third part of the ships are destroyed. But I have shown you in the last couple of Sunday mornings during Sunday school, I have shown you and proved to you from way back that these lines, these red tracks that you see on this diagram, thousands of miles of them, God's bringing up more liquid rock from underneath than he ever has brought before since we began keeping records. It's coming up on the surface and it's heating the water. It's going to turn the water during the tribulation period a red color, a rusty red color, an orange color, all sorts of different variations of the color red, from light brown through orange through red. It's going to do it by the actual oxidation or rusting of the iron content in basaltic magma when it comes up. It's also going to do it by the heating of the water that caused dinoflagellate population explosions. Well, you see where the red lines are. Two-thirds of them are on the ocean seafloor. This is what you're going to be seeing. Everywhere one of these cracks is and the liquid rock is coming up, as you see on this chart, you're going to have chains of volcanic eruption. This particular diagram shows the entire Atlantic Ocean, North Atlantic, South Atlantic, and this is what's known as the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. It's a crack in the crust of the Earth that runs all the way from virtually the North Pole down across Iceland, between the United States and Europe, between South America and Africa, and all the way down between the southern tip of South America and the southern tip of Africa. You're going to see thousands and thousands and thousands of volcanic eruptions. Well, how is God going to get this red material over one-third of the ocean and seas of the world? It's supposed to cover one-third in seas. Here on this diagram, you see these eras. The eras are the worldwide oceanic currents and drifts. They flow 365 and a quarter days a year in the general mode that you see here. It's a standard thing. Climatological charts use them. I used to do this to predict ocean movements when I had to take oceanography when I was at the school in Illinois. And it came in very handy because I got called in late one night on something that I can't talk to you about. And we had all the oceanography charts and different things, and I was asked to actually tell where a particular object that had gone down to the Pacific Ocean would move. It involved several different things, but I was very thankful for my training that I had in Illinois, because had I not had that training, I could not have told them and forecast the movement of that. But these currents, you have to know for when an object's going to move, you have to know the sail surface exposure of it. You have to know what the actual wind is blowing across it, and we have ships out in the water that gives them this. And you have to know what the ocean currents are. So with those three phenomena, you can predict the movement of a particular object if you know the sail surface exposed, if you know the winds above the surface, and if you know the ocean currents themselves. So you can see these worldwide ocean currents and drifts, and then I've shown you the tectonic plate boundaries in red. So whenever these volcanic eruptions occur, the ocean currents are going to carry that blood red liquid away from the source, and as it is carried away from the source, it will turn the water red, and it will also kill all the aquatic life. So you have a third of the aquatic life dying, you have a third of the actual ocean itself turned into a blood red color. And that completes the blowing of the second trumpet, with the exception of the ships, which, Lord willing, I'll do next Sunday morning. When I came to the ships, it was interesting. I try to be open and honest with God's word. I try never to fudge my own opinion into it. I'm often accused of that, but I'm not guilty, because I have to answer to God for everything I teach and preach, and I'm acutely aware of that, and I don't want to have to be zapped at the judgment seat of Christ. I didn't want to fudge, I didn't want to push, but I believed I knew how they would be destroyed. And so I did a lot of study. I worked, I tried to get information from the U.S. Navy. I tried to get information from all the major shipping firms, the Libyans being the greatest of all. The tramp steamers carry all kind of merchandise. I tried all the pleasure liners. I tried every type of marine and merchant and U.S. and foreign navies to try and get the information that I needed. Well, I have to admit that it was somewhat sparse and a lot of people didn't want to share it. It's not readily available. But once I did that, I had to confirm that what I had surmised was true. Well, that was the problem. I took all this stuff together. Don, you remember the objective forecast studies we used to do? Well, I had to do the same thing with this. I had to take all the information I got, put it together, do an objective forecast study. When Don and I were in school, they still used slide rules. Remember that? We didn't have all this computer stuff. We used slide rules. We did all this hullabaloo stuff. And so we did objective forecast studies. Lordy mercy, it would take us forever to do it. We'd have to put all these different parameters together, and it was awful, wasn't it? But now you got computers, you just punch it in and it does all the work for you. Well, John will tell you in an objective forecast study, you've got to have verification by an independent source. In other words, if you take all your data and you make all your data up, then if you try what you've come out with against your data, it's got to be right. So you have to get an independent source to validate it by. How was I going to get an independent source? I thought, well, we'll see. And so I wrote a long letter to Lloyd's of London. Lloyd's of London's
insures most of the world's shipping. And I said, okay, I'll get Lloyd's of London to look at it. Lloyd's of London had a computer. This was way after we got out of Chanute, and they had a computer, but I didn't. The church wanted to buy one, but I wish I, now I can't live without the thing. But in any case, I sent it to Lloyd's of London. I said, here is my conclusion. This is what I've gotten from all this information. Is it correct? Well, it took them long enough, but finally they sent back, and I've got the reply. And they said, yes, that is correct. So I'll tell you what that is next Sunday. It's very, very interesting. You say, well, you were just trying to get us interested before next Sunday. I was just trying to keep Bob awake. Well, Ken, you want to dismiss?